Recapping the weekend in sports and previewing the week ahead. This is FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Orwig and Corey LaBounty.
Good evening and welcome to Sports Night right here on FM Talk 106.5. I'm Corey LaBounty, joined tonight by Ian Blair, running the board, doing a great job as always. Just wanted to set the mood tonight for Sports Night with a little Temptations and Silent Night, and we'll be playing Christmas music as we go into the breaks and come back from the breaks tonight. And hope everybody has their Christmas shopping done or continuing to do so 4 days until Christmas. And you know, it's kind of hard to believe that Christmas 2020 is upon us and the last minute shoppers and everything that goes into the Christmas atmosphere. This being the shortest day of the year on the celestial calendar, it's a situation to where we're not short of headlines or sports stories, as there was an action-packed weekend of college football, NFL football. Coaching searches continue to go on, and one of the biggest things here locally that definitely want to lead all Sports Night is talking about South Alabama. And we talked 1 week ago about the exciting hire of new head football coach at the University of South Alabama. Kane Womack is now the head coach of South Alabama, the third coach in South Alabama history, and we knew that he was going to have to name offensive and defensive coordinators as well as fill his staff. And he's done so, and he's done so, to me, with a splash time hire from his offensive coordinator and quarterback coach, a name that's very familiar to fans of football. Major Applewhite, the former Texas quarterback, is getting the nod at offensive coordinator and new quarterbacks coach coming to South Alabama. Turned down a job and an opportunity to coach at Arkansas State, and he wants to be a part of this Jaguar Nation. And I think that's just a great hire for Coach Kane Womack, and I think he's going to do an outstanding job in regards to recruiting, because his name, Major Applewhite's name, is relevant not only in Texas but across the country, as he served as offensive coordinator at Rice in 06. He was offensive coordinator at Alabama in 2007. He's had head coaching experience at the University of Houston. And when you start talking about him also adding Robbie Zell, a tight ends coach, a former Alabama player and walk-on, does a dead spot-on impersonation to Nick Saban also. That's a great hire. Ernest Hill from McGill Tulane. That's the biggest storyline, I think, of the day also. You have a high school coach, a very successful high school coach in Ernest Hill, leaving the McGill Tulane football program and now becoming the running backs coach at South Alabama. He knows this area very well. He's competed at the highest level when McGill Tulane was at 7A. This year, was able to finish and make the playoffs in 6A in their first year, and I think he'll do a tremendous job in of doing that. And another name that's pretty familiar from an offensive line standpoint, Kevin Steele, who is currently Auburn's interim head coach. His son, Gordon Steele, will be coming to be the offensive line coach. And earlier in the week, Corey Batoon from Liberty was named the defensive coordinator for Coach Womack. And in as the staff continues to grow for South Alabama, these are all great additions and are going to create and generate a lot of excitement for this Jaguar program.
So what you're telling me is, there are low-key or high-key stacked, and if they don't have a winning season, we have some other problems up in that program.
Yeah, I think from a recruiting standpoint, you know, South Alabama's program, Coach Campbell, no knocks against him because he was able to win 4 games and double his win total, but the expectations that are there for Jaguar Nation, especially with the brand new stadium, a beautiful indoor practice facility. The next level has to be taken by this Jaguar program, especially when you're looking around the Sun Belt Conference and you have teams like Coastal Carolina being ranked in the top 10 in the country. And you also look at Troy being successful in the past, Louisiana being successful this season, the Raging Cajuns getting a lot of love, Appalachian State putting a whooping on North Texas today in a bowl game. So it is very possible to have all eyes on you as a program, and that's exactly what's happening for the University of South Alabama at this time. And again, Major Applewhite and his philosophy and the success that he's had, I think, will continue to intrigue possible student athletes, and it will keep the transfer portal down, because that's what the biggest question coming off of National Signing Day that was last Wednesday is, who would he have adding to his staff, and what would the personnel be? And I think it's important that you put the correct pieces in place. You do your due diligence, and I think Coach Kane Womack has done that for South Alabama, and I think he'll continue to add to his staff. And the guys that he has definitely know, whether it's from a walk-on perspective and being able to relate as a walk-on, or whether it's being a five-star recruit or a four-star recruit, he has. You're only going to be as good as your assistant coaches, Ian.
Yeah, and I mean, one thing we have to keep in mind here, and something that I have reiterated over and over again that we've all kind of, you know, echoed the sentiment of, is in order to have a championship team, you have to have a championship culture. And I think Womack has gotten on the right foot here, obviously Major being a huge signing there that I think one name that a lot of younger fans may not really know, but people who have been around for a bit, people who know what that Texas team was like whenever Major was there gunning that offense, that's a huge signing for him. So I expect big things out of South Alabama, and I hope they get some championships there, because I've got a lot of friends who go there that want something to do on weekend nights, if you know what I'm saying.
Well, I think it's definitely very possible. And again, as he continues to fill out his staff for those who can hit the road recruiting, I think Ernest Hill from McGill Tulane is an outstanding hire. Major Applewhite, again, being a big splash. We know who wants to coach at South Alabama. The biggest question, though, Ian, is who wants to coach at Auburn? Because this week, I mean, you're looking at interim head coach Kevin Steele. He has not got the nod, for whatever reason, from a lot of Auburn fans, alumni, students. Billy Napier, his name, it came up from Louisiana Lafayette. Now he's turned it down. Mario Cristobal re-signs with Oregon. Steve Sarkisian, he turns it down. And you start looking at, now do you go to Bill Clark from UAB, who's been a successful high school coach, been a very successful collegiate coach, and congratulations to the UAB Blazers for winning the conference championship and doing so with a lot of local flavor. When they came down here and played South Alabama earlier this year at Hancock Whitney Stadium, you saw Wilson Beaverstock, you saw Matt Quinn, you saw the starting quarterback, Thomas Johnson III, not be able to play in that game due to a shoulder injury, but still was on there. Flip Rudolph from Cottage Hill, Jermaine Brown from St. Luke's, and that roster has a lot of local talent, and now they're conference champions. So would Bill Clark leave UAB and the stability there with them building a brand new stadium to take a prestigious job at Auburn University?
I really don't think so. I'm going to give you two reasons why. One, you've just won a championship. The team is still developing. You've got a bright future ahead of you. And like you just said, new stadium being built, new attractions being made. You don't have to be a coach of a D1 school to be successful. There's a lot of areas where you can still have consistency and you can still be great and fulfill, you know, being able to uplift students and student-athletes specifically. But I'd say one thing going forward is, can UAB continue the success? It's one thing to achieve it. It's a lot harder to maintain it.
very remarkable considering UAB ended their program less than 6 years ago and had to restart it from scratch. And Bill Clark was the right guy to continue to build that program, has done so. And I don't know if Auburn will be able to sign him as head coach. It's really interesting. We'd love to hear from you guys and your thoughts on the new head coach, who you feel it should be. 251-343-0106 is how you can reach us tonight on Sports Night. Would love to hear, who do you think the next head coach should be and will be for the Auburn Tigers? Will it be Bill Clark? Will they go ahead and stay with Kevin Steele? We'll find out, but we're 8 days removed from Gus Malzahn and the Gus Bus departing. And I tell you, the longer you wait, the harder it is. Auburn did solidify some recruits during the National Signing Day, but a new head coach needs to be found at Auburn University very soon. Coming up next, we're going to talk about the Alabama Crimson Tide and their dominance in the Southeastern Conference, and will that equate in the college football playoffs? Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Sports Night.
Breaking down the big games and talking about the big names. You're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, coming in FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night. And I have to say something here about Chuck Berry that I'm just going to let run for a couple seconds, because I love this guy's voice just too much to cut him off in the middle of him having such a classic. If you don't like that, I have to question what kind of music you do like and if you need to get your ears cleaned, because that is an immaculate voice. Corey, we have to discuss a very prominent game, a game that had virtually millions of people on the edge of their seats and was probably, at least my personal pick, for the game of the year in the college football playoff. We had the SEC Championship. Now, I myself am an Alabama fan. You are as well. But what I want to hear is what you thought last night. Whether it could be from an objective point of view, what you just thought as a Bama fan as well. But I've been talking with several people about this, and it seems to kind of be a bit of both ways, of Florida just kind of choking at the end of this game, not running out of time, or maybe there was something else going on. What happened?
It's a situation where Alabama defeats Florida 52-46. All season long, we have not questioned whether Alabama can score points. And I will say this. Anybody who knows me knows that I love the 251 area code. I love Mobile, Baldwin County student athletes that go on to college and do great things. Kadarius Toney going in, I knew that you were not going to be able to stop him. You were hoping to contain him. Did I think he would have over 135 receiving yards in the first half? Absolutely not. I knew that he was going to get his. I knew it was going to be hard to stop him. Pitts, the tight end for Florida, who today went ahead and declared his eligibility for the NFL. He will not play in the Florida Gators Bowl. And he's scheduled to come to the Senior Bowl, which I think will only increase his stock as a wide receiver slash tight end. But those two guys for Florida were going to be phenomenal. And you knew that they were going to be outstanding. And you knew Kyle Trask, hopefully you were going to be able to pressure him defensively. But my thoughts on the game were that Alabama let it get a little bit closer than I expected. I thought when Alabama had the 15-17-point lead, I thought it would continue to extend or get larger. I did not think that Florida, especially when Alabama scored right before the half, I felt that to go up 28-10, I do believe, I thought that Florida was going to come out and kind of flounder in the third quarter. Alabama was going to get that huge stop and then, boom, go right back to Devontae. But, again, Mac Jones, 33 of 43 for 418 yards, 5 touchdowns, only 1 interception, and that 1 interception that he did throw off of it, probably the hardest hit that I've seen in college football this season.
It was disastrous.
John Metchie III knocked the Florida Gator wide receiver into a different zip code. And he doesn't know whether it's Christmas, New Year's, Thanksgiving, Halloween. He has no clue because that's how hard that hit was. And it was just picture perfect to where it was a turning point in the game to where Alabama, off of a turnover, was able to get it right back because Mack threw the interception in the red zone area. And it was a great defensive play, but it's one that I guarantee that defensive back learned from here moving forward. He'll put his head on a swivel. Najee Harris showed up, and I knew you expected that because with the type of coverage that teams are going to have to play to stop Devontae Smith, to me, who is a Heisman Trophy winner, not just a candidate, but just too many offensive weapons when you have Metchie III and Bolden, and Billingsley has started coming into his own as well as a wide receiver. You just have to find a way. Najee receiving hurts you more than rushing. And that's what he said. He said, look, I've been catching football since I've been in the fetal position. And I thought that was an outstanding quote. But you start looking at the receiving yards, Najee Harris, 5 receptions for 67 yards and 3 touchdowns, continues to show how he's improved at his time at Alabama. Because a year ago, he had a touchdown against South Carolina where he hurdled a defender, caught the ball out of the backfield, and 31 carries for 178 yards. You just have to pick your poison with Alabama.
I mean, there's a lot of dual threat players. There really is. And I need to say this. If your defensive back is hit so hard that when he gets up and he's walking north, he's looking south, I think there's a problem here. And we knew that defenses were going to be tested. But I think one thing that Florida can hang their hats on and they can hold their heads high on is the fact that they didn't quit. They didn't roll over and die when so many other teams this season have. They didn't do what A&M did versus Alabama. They didn't do what Auburn did or LSU or anybody else. They kept fighting. And that in of itself shows that even though this may not have been Florida's year, they are still going to be coming for quite a while. And it's a bright spot for the SEC, my personal pick for the greatest conference in the nation, as well as the future of just Florida football in general, because Dan Mullen on the hot seat apparently for some of those Florida fans that are upset about some fourth quarter play calling. But again, that 18-point lead, 35-17 was the score at half, and all of a sudden 14 points for Florida unanswered in the third quarter. Just Max just completely shut down, couldn't get much going. Najee was getting red a couple times there in some late shifts of the defensive line for Florida, but it ultimately paid off, and I think Steve Sarkisian's tactic of just keep pounding on them, keep playing away at them, and eventually they'll get tired paid off. But how effective that is going to be against something like Notre Dame, that is something that is still having to be discussed.
Well, I mean, Alabama leads 35-17 at the half. The numerous records that were set, not only by Mac Jones, but Najee Harris, Devontae Smith. You're talking about most points in a half in an SEC championship game. Alabama was on pace to score right at 70 plus. And if Nick Saban would have had his way, that was what have been done. But when you start looking at the overall strategy and what Alabama was able to accomplish, again, just too much offense. I thought defensively, Alabama continued to get better defensively, and the type of sacks and pressure, 5 total sacks. You start looking at the pressures. They were huge, too, and they had Trask a little bit rattled, which late in the game I felt they had to do. But this young talent on the University of Alabama's roster, whether it's Malachi Moore or Will Anderson, it just continues to go on and on and on for Nick Saban, and the production that you get defensively is so impressive. And that's the thing that I think when you're moving forward, and we'll get into our bowl game breakdowns in our next segment, Alabama at 11-0 definitely deserved to be the number one team in the country. If Florida doesn't throw a shoe and only had two losses going into that, one loss going into that game against LSU and is able to beat LSU, I think we're looking at a different college football playoff scenario right now. But again, you can't cry over spilled milk if you're the Florida Gators because you win as a team, you lose as a team, you did it to yourselves, and now you're 8-3 and you'll be going to a bowl game and playing a great bowl game. But the Alabama Crimson Tide, just too much Alabama, and Kadarius Toney, again, finishes the game with 8 receptions for 153 yards and 1 touchdown. He's the young man from Blount High School who will be coming to the Senior Bowl. And Pitts, 7 receptions, 129 yards with a touchdown also. And they're a tremendous offense. But, again, can Dan Mullen win the big one? Will he ever win the big one? I think that's what all Florida Gator fans are saying, and Nick Saban continues to sustain that dynasty. We'll talk about the bowl games, the college football playoffs. We'd love to hear from you, 251-343-0106. Do you think that Notre Dame and Ohio State belonged in the college football playoffs? We'll talk about that next, coming up on Sports Night.
Listening to FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Erwig and Corey LaBounty. Call the show or text your thoughts to 251-343-0106.
Welcome back to Sports Night right here on FM Talk 106.5. Just trying to get everybody in the Christmas spirit as Christmas is coming on Friday. And we're going to have a little cooler weather that's going to make it Mobile, Alabama feel like Christmas. I think the low is supposed to be right at 30 degrees. The high maybe at 40 to 42 degrees on Christmas Day. So it's actually going to feel like wintertime in Mobile, Alabama. And I tell you, you know, we were talking about before the break about the college football playoffs and those who got in, those who were outside. Of course, Texas A&M was on the outside looking in. And the coaches' ballots are always released on where they felt teams should be placed. And here's an interesting scenario. Coach Nick Saban placed the Ohio State Buckeyes at number 5 instead of number 4. And Dabo Swinney, he took it to another level and had the Buckeyes ranked at number 11. So he didn't feel the Buckeyes, based on their body of work, their short body of work, should be eligible to be in the college football playoffs. Nonetheless, they are. And when you start talking about these games that are getting ready to occur, the rankings came out and course the top 4. I think there would be no argument from anyone that Alabama was going to be number 1. The question was, with Clemson being number 2, what Ohio State would do in their bowl game, their championship game, and they were able to find a way to get a win, squeak past Northwestern, and who would be that 4th? Notre Dame, to me, got embarrassed against Clemson, but the plus side of that is even without Trevor Lawrence, they had that win against Clemson on their resume. And would I want to see Clemson Notre Dame play for a national championship game if both of them are able to get past their first game? Absolutely not. I wouldn't want to see it again. But at the same time, that's where we are, and that's exactly what we're going to see.
Well, I kind of have to keep my – I'm a very passionate guy. I use logic a lot, but I also have a very passionate personality. And like I said before, I'm an SEC homer, so to not see A&M on this list, to not see a team that, in my opinion, would be more qualified. Ohio State played 2 ranked opponents this year. Corey won before they played Northwestern, and that was number 11, Indiana. I understand that everyone's going to freak out about the 6 games. I'm not even going to touch on that because that in of itself is just that's not the fault of Ohio State. That's the fault of the commissioner of just the conference in general not wanting to stay his course and let's have a 10-game schedule. So what I want to know is why A&M had a very similar kind of record. Obviously, one loss there for A&M, but at the same time, in my opinion, A&M is not only the better team, they also had a better showing in a better conference. How does that not translate to being number four? I have absolutely no idea.
Well, again, the college football playoff rankings, Alabama at one, Clemson at two, Ohio State at three, Notre Dame at four, A&M at five, Oklahoma at six, Florida at seven, Cincinnati at eight, Georgia at nine, Iowa State at 10, and that's the college football playoff rankings. Now, the AP top 25 differed a little bit. Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, and Notre Dame still in your top four. Texas A&M comes in at five. Cincinnati, number six in the AP. Indiana at seven. Oklahoma at eight. Coastal Carolina at nine. And Florida at 10 as far as being part of the AP top 25. And when you start looking at these bowl games and the interest that I want to see, of course, the Alabama-Notre Dame matchup, we all remember what happened in the national championship game where Alabama absolutely made Notre Dame quit in the first half of that national championship game. And also, you had Brian Kelly at halftime of that game said, you know, what adjustments do you have to make in the second half? Well, for Alabama not to show up. And that's the mentality he feels that he's learned from that, feels like his team or organization and program has grown since that initial game against Alabama. But we'll see what happens, whether Notre Dame comes prepared to play or not. But for those who didn't believe Ohio State belonged in, we're going to find out real quick with them playing Clemson, because since the college football playoffs have existed over these last 4 or 5 years, we've seen a lot of Alabama, we've seen a lot of Clemson, we've seen a lot of Ohio State, and that's just pretty much the big dogs. The non-Power 5 schools are not getting any love. I mean, you're looking at Cincinnati slipping in there at number 8 in the college football playoff rankings, and then also being ranked number 6 in the AP top 25. But Coastal Carolina, if there was ever a year to where a non-Power 5 school had an opportunity to me based on the overall body at work, you mentioned it, Ian, Ohio State finishes the regular season at 6-0. And everyone else, you start looking at their resume, has played 11 and 10 games. And it's just not there for Ohio State. And when you look at Cincinnati being 9-0, when you look at Coastal Carolina being 11-0, I just don't see how, if this wasn't the year for a non-Power 5 to get in, I don't see it ever happening.
Well, I'm hearing some of the most ridiculous claims coming out of some people that are against the committee on this one. Look, the committee established their criteria a very long time ago in terms of sports, and it's hilarious how some sports people forget. And Corey, I have to kind of go into my Stephen A. Smith mode here, where I'm going to start sounding like I'm out of Boston, it seems like, because the committee stated very clearly that they were going to value conference championships no matter what schedule was played. That was very clear and defined from the moment that they started selecting, hence why Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, the top three teams that you said, have won the majority of their conference championships since the playoffs started. And while I do not like the pick, personally, of Ohio State being there due to their strength of schedule and everything else, I do have to applaud the committee for this. They're staying consistent, and they are staying with they're sticking to their guns, and they're making sure that, okay, we have a set criteria, and we're not just going to change it depending on the year simply because of a pandemic or anything else.
You know, it's one of those situations to when you start looking at the bowl games, I'm really intrigued, definitely, by some of the matchups that are going to be played. I really want to see Florida and Oklahoma play in the Goodyear Cotton Bowl Classic. And that game's going to be early. It's going to be Wednesday, December 30th. I want to see who's going to win that game. And then you start looking about to the New Year's Day games. Georgia and Cincinnati, that's 8-9. Georgia, to me, has gotten their quarterback situation squared away. I'm looking forward to seeing that matchup. And Cincinnati has a chance to prove that they do belong, that their name is relevant in the discussion. Ohio State, Clemson. Well, I'm looking Clemson being favored by 7.5 points. I think that Clemson has the ability to beat Ohio State, and I think they showed that last year also. And Notre Dame, Alabama. Alabama comes in as the largest favorite since the college football playoffs have been introduced at 19.5 favorites. And I just think overall from a bowl season, Texas A&M having an opportunity to play in the Capital One Orange Bowl against Mack Brown's North Carolina Tar Heels. North Carolina at 8-3, Texas A&M at 8-1. Jimbo Fisher has a chance to continue to say, hey guys, we have to continue to show and to prove why we did belong, not how hard it is to get your team up for a bowl game where you felt like you should have been in the college football playoffs. You have to show that you continue not only to build for next year, because I can remember Alabama catapulting itself in the Nick Saban era when they had to play Michigan State in a game that was not for the national championship, absolutely throttled Michigan State, and went on the next year to go ahead and win the national championship. So those are the type of things that I'm looking for in these bowl games. And we have one right here in Mobile, Alabama, coming with Georgia State playing Western Kentucky on Saturday. So that will be a interesting matchup between those two schools. Both of those schools being at 5-6 will play one another in the Lending Tree Bowl right here at Ladd Peoples Stadium. Kickoff scheduled for 2:30. Other interesting bowl announcements that came out today. Tennessee, they're in a little bit of trouble. Jeremy Pruitt, we know he's in hot water in regards to their overall record. Tennessee was 3-7. No Liberty Bowl for them this year due to the COVID-19 pandemic and players and coaches coming up with COVID-19. But I think this is one of those years that, because of possible recruiting violations by Tennessee, Jeremy Pruitt's job is in jeopardy at Tennessee. And I think that if you had a self bowl ban, this was the game to where Tennessee definitely didn't need to play. South Carolina is going to play in a bowl with only 2 wins. I feel that Army should be in a bowl with 9 wins. And also dealing with bowl bans, Bo Pelini has been dismissed after 1 season as LSU's defensive coordinator. No surprise there, as LSU was second to last in the SEC in total defense. Pelini signed a 3-year, $2.3 million contract with the Tigers, and he's just going to enjoy that money at the house or trying to find another coaching position. But Tennessee being 3-7 and not having an opportunity to play in a bowl, it starts limiting your options to where we're going to have to find a way to fill games with teams that are deserving throughout this football season. We knew 2020 was going to look different at the beginning of the football season. We're glad that we were able to finish and want to continue to do so. But I do expect at the end of the day for Alabama to be crowned national champions, and we'll see how they decide to play here on January 1, and we'll talk more about that as next week rolls around. But also, big time news today, our condolences to Kevin Green, the former walk-on linebacker at Auburn University, is a 2016 NFL Hall of Famer, died today at the age of 58, had 160 sacks, which is third in the NFL history, played 15 years in the NFL for multiple teams, especially for the Pittsburgh Steelers. They called it the Blitzburg defense. Going to miss Kevin Green, and condolences to him and the Auburn family in that tremendous loss. Coming up next, we're going to talk about the NBA season that tips off tomorrow night.
You're listening to FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Arwig and Corey LaBounty. Call the show or text your thoughts to 251-343-0106.
Man, I tell you, if it is one voice that I have ever heard that sounds this like, I can visualize silk, like a spider kind of silk. It's smooth. I mean, Whitney Houston is that voice.
Without question.
No question at all.
it, hands down, Whitney Houston, one of the best to ever do it. And, you know, Shannon wants to talk to us about whether Cincinnati is one of the best to ever do it. Cincinnati 9-0, averaging 39 points per game. We'll have an opportunity to play Georgia. Good evening, Shannon. Thanks for calling Sports Night.
All right, thank you. Hey, guys, first of all, I would like to say this right here. I listen to a lot of sports shows throughout my day. By far, you all are the best local station and could be one of the best in the state. I would love to see what you all could do with a 3-hour show. Get the sponsors, make it happen for next fall. Okay? We got that out the way. Now, here's Cincinnati. If Cincinnati plays Georgia, when they play Georgia, and if they beat Georgia, here's what we'll hear, that Georgia wasn't ready to play. They didn't care about playing. Cincinnati had more to play for. Okay, that's going to happen. If they beat Georgia, here's the next thing going to happen, that the playoff committee, when it's all said and done, then they will put Cincinnati at 3 or 4 after the fact. So a team like Cincinnati cannot win. They cannot win. The whole system needs to be blown up. And this is what's going to make the system blow up. If Notre Dame has to play Clemson for a third time, then the system will blow up.
Yeah.
Now I need you all's opinion.
I agree with the fact that no one – I know I don't want to see Notre Dame and Clemson play a third time. Shannon, do you think that college football should expand in the playoffs? I think that's the question, the next question that has to be asked. Do you have a play-in game? Do you need expansion so you can get non-Power 5 schools involved? Because here it is, Coastal Carolina, they're 11-0, and according to the college football playoff rankings, they're at 12.
Okay, well, here's the thing. Okay, say, for instance, if Cincinnati or Carolina was at the number 4 spot and had to play Alabama, they're going to beat the devil out of Alabama's going to beat the devil out of them anyway. Alabama's going to beat the devil out of Notre Dame, so why does it matter who's playing the number 4 spot? At least put a guy in there that's undefeated. Give the small guy a chance, man. That's all I'm saying.
I agree. That too.
Yeah, Shannon. I'm with you on give the small schools an opportunity. Non-Power 5. If there was ever a year that it had to be done, it had to be. And this was the perfect year to do it anyway, because you have so many schools that don't qualify or not going to bowl games, or a team like South Carolina with only 2 wins qualifies as a SEC school because of the bowl tie-ins. Army can't even get in, and they're going to have to be put in after somebody else like Tennessee or somebody else decides that they don't want and cannot go bowling.
Okay, here's another thing, guys. If you and your cohort and myself were to put down who's going to be the next 14 or the 14 that's going to play 10 years from now, pretty much we can tell you who those 14 are going to be. And I don't think the thing cannot continue to go with that kind of pattern. That's not – who wants to watch that over and over and over again and again?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I mean, Army finally does get in Tennessee's place in the Liberty Bowl, but for them to not initially be aligned, and you know how it boils down to this. It boils down to money. That's the reason why we're playing the college football season. That's the reason why the SEC decided to play 10 games. It wasn't a random number that they chose. They could have played 6. They could have played 8, but the more – that you play, the more money and revenue is generated. Same thing with why did Notre Dame get in? Why didn't Texas A&M get in? It boils down to money. And the names, the marquee names, is what it boils down to me, Shannon.
I agree with you on that, man. It's all about the money. And you know what I know, that those 4 teams were already set.
Yeah, I think they were going in as well.
Yeah, if Florida beats Alabama, guess what? Florida still don't get in. Alabama's still in. Notre Dame's still in. Clemson and Ohio State is already preset. So,
yeah.
I mean, I mean, anyway, man, it's kind of, I understand what he's doing. It's all about money, but how do you fix it? That's the question.
Yeah, I think there definitely has to be adjustment, Shannon. Thank you so much for tuning in and listening to us on Sports Night. We appreciate your support and appreciate those kind words. And please continue to call in and continue to listen to us on Sports Night right here on FM Talk 106.5. I think the biggest thing, the solution, is going to be to step outside of that box in regards to your preconceived notions. At some point in time, the little guy has to get that opportunity. Even if they do get crushed, at least give them that opportunity. You have to change that narrative. And if there ever was a year, I'm going to continue to say this, it was this year to change that narrative in, and has not been done as of yet.
I mean, I do agree with I don't think I was able to answer it initially here, but I do agree that this should have been the year that maybe somebody like A&M or, you know, Cincinnati gets in. But one thing we have to remember about the reason why this playoff was instituted in the first place was because people weren't happy with the BCS. People weren't happy that the SEC and all these other conferences, that it was in favor of the Power Five conferences to begin with.
Well, expansion is an opportunity to continue to expand the pocketbooks of the networks, and you'll continue to see that. I think expansion is coming because you're still going to allow an opportunity, kind of like, I love March Madness. That's why March Madness is a huge draw, because the more teams that you have on, you expand it from 32 to 64, 64 to 68. You have those play-in games. If you add or expand, yes, ultimately somebody is going to get left out. We do know that. But again, if it's going to be tied to money, expansion to me is the answer, to where you do give guys like Coastal Carolina or like Cincinnati an opportunity to play the big dogs. And they may not win the second game, but all it takes is winning the first, and that's kind of what Ohio State's head coach should say. Hey, once we get in, we just need an opportunity. In switching gears to the NBA, we know the NBA just ended its season in the bubble. Now we're stepping outside of the bubble. Tomorrow night, we tip off Golden State and Brooklyn, the Clippers and the Lakers, to tip off the 2020-21 NBA season.
Well, the NBA has had a very, very frustrating time from among some of the players who have said, I'm not going to play. I don't think I can do this.
And you know what, guys? You know what you need to do? It's your job.
So guess what? I understand you may hate having only a month-long offseason. I understand the fact that you may want to sit there. Stephen A. Smith mode again. I understand that you want to sit there and you want to try to have your little crybaby offseason, but guys, understand, you have tickets to go and sell. The league is already suffering as it is. Fellas, even if you only play half effort on the defensive end, LeBron's been doing that for years. Go out and play some ball, fellas. Come on.
Who's your favorite to win it all? The Lakers? Will they repeat as NBA champions?
I have the Lakers taking two losses total in the Western Conference, and I have them beating the Brooklyn Nets. You heard it here first. If Kevin Durant is healthy, it will be the Brooklyn Nets coming out of the East in the finals in five games.
We'll continue to talk about the NBA season as it progresses. We'll talk about the bowl games next week on Sports Night. Hopefully Auburn will have a coach by that time next week. You're listening to Sports Night. Thank you for listening to Sports Night. Everybody have a Merry Christmas from Sports Night right here on FM Talk 106.5.
Feliz Navidad.